most amazing feeling I feel. Words can't describe it, but feeling for real. Baby, I paint the sky blue. My greatest creation was you. You. Glory.
Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez, where you're listening to Glory by the artist Jay-Z. Glory was released just 2 days after Blue was born. That's the first child of Jay-Z and his wife Beyoncé. Glory reflects on the struggles Jay-Z and Beyoncé had in becoming parents and how significant their first child's birth is in both their lives. Now, the song exemplifies the message behind author Juan Vidal's book, debut book, Rap Dad. The Miami native's memoir details his trajectory as a traveling hip-hop artist to a father of four kids and becoming a successful writer and music critic. Now, Vidal examines the ways in which hip-hop has informed his life and the fathers in hip-hop who are changing the mainstream narrative about fathers of color being absent in their children's lives. Vidal joins us now in studio ahead of the launch of his book tour tomorrow evening at Books and Books in Coral Gables. Juan, man, it's a pleasure, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Big fan of the show.
So much appreciated, and really a lot much appreciated for this book. I wanted to get a sense. What does it mean for you to be a rap dad? If somebody comes up and asks you, what does that even mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think it encompasses a lot. I mean, growing up, I would say hip hop was kind of like the literature of my generation in a lot of ways. And I feel like this is the generation now that is, you know, give or take about as old as the culture itself. And these are men and women who are becoming parents now. And with hip hop being the force that it is, it's really the most dominant youth culture in the world. So I would say to be a rap dad or even a rap mom, it's kind of like a parent who's been informed and kind of grew up with the culture in a lot of ways raising them. And it informs the way they parent, the way they go about the world. Because like I said, it's really the strongest youth movement in the world, the most influential. It informs everything, from advertising to products, everything.
We heard a little Jay-Z at the top, but who are some of the essential rap dads in current pop culture that you look to for inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because as more fathers become parents, especially hip-hop artists, you see them become more and more vocal about their parenthood. Like, you'd be hard-pressed to find an interview where, for example, Chance the Rapper doesn't mention being a father. You know, his album The Coloring Book was like, it's almost like a manifesto about what it means to be a father and a man, and kind of changing some of these narratives about what it means to be a man and a parent. So I would say him, and definitely Jay-Z, people like Nas, even Fat Joe, and yeah, they're just really influential figures that really own their parenthood and are very visible, you know, from their Instagrams to their Twitters and stuff, constantly posting pictures of them and their kids. T.I., where, you know, these reality shows that kind of give you more of an inside look into who they are as parents and not just entertainers and artists, but give you a more personal look into their lives.
So let's get to the book. Let's hear a portion from the book that really delves into these ideas. I'm going to have you read from the first chapter and then we're going to talk about it. So go ahead.
The 80s made us. They also saw the ascent of crack, neo-expressionism, and what would become the soundtrack to our lives, hip-hop. We were awed by the pedestaled beings on the tube, the deaf poets and their flawless fits, and the jerseyed watercolor figures leaping high as the sun. MCs, ball players, the kung fu man whose family never called him Bruce but Little Phoenix. Everything they did, we tried, eager for someone to emulate. We were the fatherless, searching for our footing, steady on the hunt for a narrative. Our mothers carried what seemed like the weight of the world on their backs. They were scrappy, selfless. They loved hard and worked their fingers to the pink. But the void we felt was inescapable. Then it hit us like something furious blazed in from afar. This thing with its beauty, its built-in contradiction. It was loud and savage and free, like us. We were drawn to hip-hop's magnetic pull, transfixed by its starts and stops. Like the Spanish and Patois and Creole of our homes, it became a part of us. It carried the same force as our mother tongues, only it wasn't in the language of our mothers, so they couldn't teach it or take it away. They damn sure tried. At Silver Lake's middle, it was our strut, how we cracked jokes. We invoked KRS and the Jungle Brothers, and in 92, as a nod to Rakim, Gino got Don't Sweat the Technique etched in his fade. We lost it, and that Chico was king for the whole quarter. In those days, many of us came to see our fathers as ghosts, apparitions who would appear one moment and be gone the next. They were in love, then they weren't, they played at life. They seldom prospered and never mastered the minutes. There was only that, the days swooping past with the wind in their hair. Over and over they broke our hearts. But we the children ate our fill and grew. Some of us went to war, some to university, others nowhere fast. We all aged and many became husbands, some fathers. Soon there were lawyers, therapists, preachers, tons of figuring and psychoanalysis, a lot of cheating and come mierda. Regrets, fractured family structures, everyone trying to manage, never having learned how to properly navigate it all. We were never taught the way of stand-up cats that handled theirs. We had to dig deep, and in time, some of those skills came, like the night. Night always came, and that was the truest thing. Right and left, we saw other grown-up kids who were left to chance, the faint memories of distracted fathers. This is the story of us.
So lyrical. I also know because you were a rapper, it makes sense that it was so lyrical. But before we get to the fact that you yourself are a rapper, is I wondered, how did you approach writing this memoir?
I had to dig deep. I had to be quite honest, revisit a lot of things that I didn't necessarily want to revisit. Because it is a memoir, it's a very personal story, and it gives you kind of a trajectory of me growing up in South Florida and being, you know, a son of Colombian parents and stuff, with a father who is kind of, he lived up to the machismo, you know, attitude and kind of way of being that a lot of Latin men, a lot of uncles that we had and many of our fathers had. And so I saw a lot of things that I wish I hadn't seen. So I had to dig deep and kind of revisit a lot of these memories that I was trying to make sense of, just tangled kind of loose things with no context that I had to start to kind of interrogate, asking my mom, what was this about? And, you know, and I gave her hell through the process of writing this book because I wanted to tell a very complete story that gave a sense of, you know, a narrative arc, of course, but I had to really tell some of those less than flattering moments of my upbringing and even a lot of the upbringings of my friends. So, yeah, it was a trying process, but I had to do it.
and as you said, you know, a big part of the story is growing up in Miami. The first part of the book is about you growing up in Miami. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, you know, help me understand how you understood Miami as a child. What did it mean to you? How did this city shape you?
Yeah, well, I grew up in between kind of Fort Lauderdale and Miami, a lot of time in Broward and some time in Miami as well. And it was what I love Miami is it's very Caribbean and stuff. And I actually live in Atlanta now. I've been there for a year and a half. I actually moved there to finish this book. But those are some of the things that I really miss. It's just the Caribbean culture and just a very diverse, you know, scene. A vibrant art scene, a vibrant arts and cultural scene, which it always has been. But also I was exposed to a lot of things, you know, as a kid that maybe weren't so flattering, you know, like especially in the 80s and 90s, drugs were huge here in Colombia and stuff in South Florida. And a lot of them came from Colombia, which is my background. So in a lot of ways, it's a story that we've seen told as far as some of the foundational elements. But I think a lot of that shaped me because it gave me a broader worldview and understanding of an international city.
And you also talk about, you know, some of the challenges of your youth growing up. And of course, you mentioned your father a couple of times, very polarizing figure in your life. He struggled with drugs. He was a womanizer. How did seeing him at times disengage from his family and get enraptured in all these vices, how did that shape you as a young man, but also then shape your views of fatherhood?
Yeah, it definitely tainted a lot of those views of fatherhood. And because I saw things that I really shouldn't have seen, it even though I didn't have a lot of context for some of those memories because I was so young, as I grew older, it made me realize that, wow, like, men don't just have to be one way. Like, men and women are very complicated. Humans are very complicated, and we have a lot of complex emotions, and we don't have to fit into these stereotypes of, for example, what a Latin man should be. You know, a lot of us that grew up in these certain households with fathers and uncles that did a lot of womanizing, like, as we grow older, we really have to make those choices of how we're going to treat women and how we're going to respect them in a variety of ways.
And how did you do, you know, because you also talk about that one thing that, you know, comes up a lot in you know, the Latino fam, the machismo. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did you grow up with that and how did you make sense of what it meant to be a man?
Yeah, I struggled for a long time concerning what it meant to be a man because it was always, you know, the more girls you have, you know, the more of a man you are. And that was the view we had in even late elementary school to middle school and high school, you know, and I have kids now. I can't imagine the things. My oldest is 10. I can't imagine the things running through his mind. it's scary at times, but and things are worse now than they were, I think, in a lot of ways when I was a kid, as far as what we're being exposed to. And so I just had to dig deep. I had to make a very conscious effort to not be a certain way, to not fall into certain traps.
And I think it was, I wanted to get to this point. I don't want to miss this out, is that you, at one point, you were kind of going down that path and, you know, a bit of a delinquent yourself when mm-hmm. you were young, and your mother got mad.
Yeah.
And as punishment, she sent you back to Colombia for a year.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting time because she tricked me. She kind of always threatened that, you know, she would send me to live with like uncles and aunts and stuff to kind of help whip me into shape. And I really never believed that she would do it. But after she found some weed in my wallet one day, I was about 16, and that was kind of the last straw for her. And so she made me really believe that I was actually going on a vacation, and I ended up staying.
And spending a year, right? It was about a year of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It was your junior year of high school, right?
Yeah, it was.
Spending a year in Colombia, what did that do to you?
Well, it shaped me in a lot of ways, and it gave me the tools, I think, to become a storyteller, because it really did broaden my worldview and it helped me see beyond my own environment. And it really just opened my eyes to how big the world is, where my parents and their parents come from. And it helped me to appreciate my parents a lot more, especially my mom and their surroundings that I had. But it definitely shaped me in a lot of ways.
I'm talking with Juan Vidal. He's a music critic and regular contributor to NPR. His debut book, Rap Dad, is about the intersectionality between hip-hop and fatherhood. And he launches his book tour tomorrow with a reading and a book signing at Books and Books in Coral Gables. Your life changed dramatically when you turned a hobby of writing verses and rapping into becoming a musician. How did you become part of a hip-hop group that was connected with a church?
Yeah. Well, it was a group of guys that I played basketball with, you know, on the weekends, and I didn't know it, but they were churchgoers. And one day, you know, we had a lot of things in common, from sports to music. We liked the same entertainment. And one day they just invited me to church. And I walked in, and it was like nothing I'd ever seen. You know, 200, 300 kids that looked like me, liked the same music like me. And from then, I kind of formed a bond with this group of friends, and we just started making music together.
And what type of music?
Hip-hop.
Hip-hop? But it was the hip-hop like what you would hear from some of your, from some of your heroes?
Mm-hmm.
Or because, you know, was it something, because of the church, was it something that was very different?
I think it was the things we wrote about and rapped about was just kind of a natural overflowing of what was already in us. So, like, yeah, there was some devotion to it in that way, but it was kind of like the same way the Fugees or even KRS-One and some of these mainstream artists that I loved growing up, they talked a lot about spirituality, you know what I mean? And you wouldn't classify them in a box as this kind of hip hop or this kind, you know what I mean? So I think it was just a natural overflowing of what we were thinking at the time and what we were dealing with growing into manhood is what a lot of the content was about.
So now this
girls,
is,
all that kind of stuff.
This is now shaping more again. Now your manhood, your ideas of manhood mm-hmm. is being reshaped again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is around the time you start thinking about fatherhood. Take me to the when you finally did become a dad for the first time. And I mean, at that point, you know, where were you as a man and your understanding of fatherhood? Now you're a dad.
It's interesting because I don't hear a lot of men say this, but I feel like I always wanted to be a father, even when I was 16 and 17 I didn't know how to do anything, but I knew I wanted to be a dad some way, which is really odd. And I don't know if that was just a subconscious way of just wanting to correct mistakes that my own father made. I don't know really where that came from, but I would just be writing names for kids in a notebook. And like, I knew I wanted to be a father. And as I grew older, and I say older, I mean, even just early 20s, I knew it was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to have boys and girls, and I wanted to be that figure that someone could depend on to kind of lead them down the right way in a way that I didn't have myself.
And how did you find balance? Because that's one of the interesting things. Again, looking at these hip hop fathers that you look up to, it's a difficult life. I mean, mm-hmm. they have a public persona in their private life, and they're in demand and they have to be everywhere all the time. You're a traveling musician mm-hmm. and you're a dad now?
Yeah. That was some of the struggle early on when I had, you know, 2 and 3 kids is touring and being gone for 10 days and 12 days at a time. And like, Papi has to go work, you know, because I had to be on the road in order to provide. And as my family grew, that became more and more of a burden. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, is I wanted to really interrogate like how fathers and even mothers balance creative ambition with being there as parents. And that's why I started to talk to some of these heroes and some of these people to see how they did it, because it was really interesting to me. It was a struggle for me, especially early on.
And one of those heroes for you is influential rapper Nas. And I wanted to, let's take a listen to his song Daughters, because he talks about this balance between that creative and being a dad.
I saw my daughter send a letter to some boy her age who locked up. First I regretted it, then caught my rage. Like, how could I not protect her from this awful phase? Never try to hide who I was, she was taught and raised like a princess. But while I'm on stage, I can't leave her defenseless. Plus she see me switching women, pops was on some pimps. She heard stories of her daddy thugging. So if her husband is a gangster, can't be mad, I love her. Never, for her I want better. Homie in jail, dead dad, wait till he come home.
Why does that message behind this track resonate with you so strongly?
Well, first, because I have a daughter myself, and I think someone like Nas, who grew up with a father that in a lot of ways was like mine, it really starts to make you question who you are when you have your own daughter. And you should do that earlier. It shouldn't take you having a daughter or any kid to look at your own self and see, you know, am I a good person? But having a daughter really, it made me realize also how we talk about having daughters and how we talk about young women and girls these days. We always commend them for being beautiful and you look so pretty in your dress, and it's all these kind of outward things. And I've been very intentional in the way that I compliment my daughter. I don't just call her beautiful. I say, you're strong, you know, you're fast, you can do anything your brothers can do. And I think it's important to affirm young girls in ways that are not necessarily reflective of their appearance all the time.
See, I hear a little bit of what you're saying there, is that you're kind of, you want to do what your dad didn't do for you.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I wanted to come back and ask you about, again, growing up with hip-hop music and how it shaped you. First of all, when did you start listening to it?
At a pretty young age. I mean, I remember hearing like MC Hammer and stuff when I was in probably fourth grade.
All the memories. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that was more like pop, I would say. But right. I mean, groups like Public Enemy and stuff when I was really young definitely made an impression, because it was angry. You know, there was so much ferocity and frustration in it, and I gravitated to that.
Yeah. What was it exactly about listening to that? And was that the first like real rap that you listened to? Because I wanted to get a sense of like when you really connected with it.
Yeah. I would say Public Enemy was definitely one of the first groups that I gravitated to because of that youthful angst.
Do you remember the first song? Because I want to know, what is it about the music that grabbed you?
Probably Fight the Power. You know what I mean? And it was because it had a social message to it as well and stuff. And so it wasn't just about them. It was about looking at the world and pointing out these injustices. And I gravitated to the anger, to be honest, because I feel like I had a lot of pent up angst. And so it gave me confidence in a lot of ways. And I think that's what hip hop does for a lot of young kids. There's a swagger to it and there's an attitude to it that when you recite these verses, it gives you a certain level of confidence, helps you to like stand taller, you know? So it's a very powerful thing.
Something that was fascinating, I mean, as a child of the 80s myself, watching how rap all of a sudden entered, you know, the lexicon, mm-hmm. you know, the American lexicon. And something you said I thought was really beautiful is that, you know, for you, hip-hop was your literature.
Yeah.
You know, and so really more than, I take it more than reading, mm-hmm. it was listening to the lyrics, it was listening to the music. You didn't just listen to the music, you were listening to what was being said.
Yeah, I think from a young age, I had a very deep appreciation for language and saying things in a beautiful way, saying things that made you kind of see what the person was saying. And so I brought that into my own writing. I wanted to be very visual. I wanted you to be able to read something and picture what it is that's happening. And rap, it is it's poetry. You know, and Jay-Z's book that he wrote called Decoded breaks down the way that he wrote these songs and the way that it informed his life.
I wanted to finish with this before I run out of time is, you know, I come back to what I said before at the beginning of this conversation, is that there is a perception, but also really a portrayal of men of color, Latino men, black men in the media. And, you know, you think about the absentee father and so many other things. But what is it we could do better, you know, in the media, whether it's in movies, television, or in the way we cover the news? that we could do better to change that perception, because it's not that way.
Yeah.
That happens, yes, but that's not that way. You're a dad. You take your kids to the park.
Mm-hmm.
You're like any soccer dad.
Yeah.
You know, but what is it?
I think it's listening to people's stories. I think it's being responsible, especially in the arenas of media and journalism, and even filmmaking. It's getting more Black men and Latinos in writers' rooms, and Black women and Latina women in writers' rooms, so that they can tell stories that reflect their own lives and what they see going on around them. So I think it's being responsible. You know, there's some media outlets that don't want to do that. They want to tell a certain story because they want to pitch a certain narrative, and it's false and it's irresponsible. So I think we as people need to be able to speak up and say, no, these are our stories. You know, none of my friends or our deadbeat moms and dads, you know what I mean? They're raising their kids.
Real quickly, what do people walk away with after reading your book? What do you want them to walk away with?
I think I would want people to walk away with just an understanding that there's a world out there, whether they relate to it or not, that's big and beautiful, and everyone's story demands to be told and deserves to be told. And that's the only way the world can move forward and progress in good ways is through storytelling.
Juan Vidal, music critic, regular contributor to NPR. His debut book is called Rap Dad. And again, he's got a reading and a book signing at Books and Books tomorrow in Coral Gables. We'll have more information on our Facebook page. Juan, it's such a pleasure, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks
Likewise.
So much.
Thank you.